This copyrighted podcast is presented by the U.S. Highbush Blueberry Council. The opinions and views shared by those of non-paid guests on the business of blueberries are those of our guests and do not represent the views, positions, or policies of the USHBC. Welcome to the Business of Blueberries, your source for what's happening across the blueberry industry. Here's your host, President of the U.S. Highbush Blueberry Council, Casey Cronquist.
Well, welcome back to another episode of the Business of Blueberries, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to the blueberry industry. Now, we have a dynamic episode for you today featuring a leader in the blueberry industry, Todd Egan, who is making his first appearance on the show. You may remember him as a distinguished speaker at one of our virtual meetings in 2020 by the U.S. Highbush Blueberry Council and the North American Blueberry Council, where he spoke on In Search of the Perfect Blueberry. Todd hails from sunny Southern California and has 30 years of experience working in the produce industry. He currently works at Good Farms and is renowned for his previous role as a lead berry buyer in Costco's fresh produce department. Todd, I'm excited to talk with you today. Thanks for joining me on the Business of Blueberries.
Casey, thank you for having me. I don't know if I've ever been described as dynamic, so hopefully I don't disappoint.
You won't. And this conversation is going to be super dynamic. And I think we just need to start with folks who don't know you, our audience listening, who may not know who Todd Egan is. It's always good to just kind of start with that blank slate. And you can just talk a little bit about your background, your career, and kind of what led you into the berry business.
Of course, you know, certainly have been blessed. And I always like to say it's better to be lucky than good, and even better to be both. I would just say I got really lucky to kind of be gently nudged by my parents to apply for a job at Costco right out of college. I think it was more because they were trying to get me off the couch than anything else. But nonetheless, started out of Costco. I mean, I come from a retail family. My dad was in retail his whole career, most of it with Costco. And when he says how much of a great company it is, I was excited to try. Got a job working at Tustin, California, as we opened a new location, you know, and had a few years of experience on the operation side and loved that. But I have a little bit more of an analytical kind of mind and wanted to get into the buying side. Was blessed to be able to get into the buying office. You know, one thing that as I reflect back on my years in the berry industry, as well as with Costco, the one common theme was change and transition. And here we are, you know, 30 years later from starting at Costco. And the one thing that still is constant is the change within the blueberry industry. So it's such an exciting industry. The future looks so bright and it just seems to change every day. Yeah. So really worked my way up in the buying office at Costco and you know, really learned the business. What an incredible company from a culture standpoint to be able to learn that there is a way to do business where everybody, all the stakeholders are kind of respected and treated well. You know, what that looked like then was members, employees, suppliers, and shareholders ultimately. So incredible experience, learned a ton, have just so many good things to say. Costco contributed to me and my family much more than I think I could have ever contributed to them. But really when I looked at then, you know, if you go back to 2000, when I took over the berry category, started buying it, there was an amazing amount of change. I mean, at the time, it was a seasonal category that we had for a few months. And, you know, it was mainly out of the Pacific Northwest, Michigan, and New Jersey, kind of northern high bush varieties. And then you just go through, like, in five-year increments, all the changes that happened, right? A seasonal imported program. Then starting to dive into, you know, the shoulders. And then with all the great, like, genetic kind of progress that was made and moving to mid-chill, then low-chill, then no-chill, you know, it would have been tough for me not to have success growing the category. And again, it wasn't anything I was doing. It was the system of Costco that had taught their employees to do the right thing and really kind of chase quality. And that's really what I did. I just tried to chase quality, improve every day. And so kind of grew up in the industry buying blueberries and had so many great mentors, both within Costco as well as growers, shippers, marketers that really just kind of helped me along the way. And it was so much fun to just kind of see blueberries become a year-round commodity that people needed to consume. And, you know, Oprah and Dr. Oz taught us all, hey, we should eat more blueberries. And I couldn't agree more.
Well, and in that period of time, you know, where you're describing, it's just been kind of an evolution after an evolution as we get increasingly dialed into who that blueberry consumer is these days. You know, what does that feel like for you today compared to when you got involved in Costco in 2000? I mean, like you just described, the influencers into the category who, you know, jumped on the health message. But how has that changed? What's it feel like for you today compared to when you got involved at Costco in 2000, when you look at the consumer of blueberries now?
Yeah, I think at the time it seemed very niche, very, you know, like I said, seasonal. And it was really about trying to manage the volume that was available. You know, the lineup was Duke, Blue Crop, Elliott. And so you had much different Eden experiences in those varieties. And for the most part, at least from my perspective, consumers didn't necessarily know why the variety is different this week than it was 2 weeks ago when they bought them. So that inconsistency, you know, all three of those varieties have attributes. Whether or not those attributes resonated with the consumer, you know, again, we could probably have a debate on that in the conversation. So I think now the consumer is looking at it for health. You know, it's a great snack to feed your kids. If you can get produce, especially those that have young kids, that your kids will eat consistently and enjoy them, they're always in the basket. I mean, always have been a part of my family's basket for a really long time, because the kids would eat them and so did my wife and I. So yeah, I think it's just become so much more of, I'd say, a staple for families that are, you know, trying to eat healthier, but also, you know, overlay that with busy lifestyles and sports and, you know, what can we throw in a Tupperware and take to the soccer field that'll still be good at the end of the game. So it's just expanded to the point where I think it's just part of everyday diets. And having listened to prior podcasts, seeing what the per capita is and the possibilities there, it's so exciting. So I think we're still just scratching the surface on kind of what blueberries can represent to the consumer.
Well, and I know you're referring to what we see in recent consumer data that basically shows that just 20% of today's blueberry buyers are responsible for 60% of the dollars. You know, really leaving us with a group of those who eat blueberries today, just buying 6.4 pounds a year. And you were in a seat where you got to see, you know, scan data, SKUs, things fly out the door. But what did it teach you? What kind of feedback loop did you get from the eating experience from consumers? How did you know, or did you know, or what kind of a setup of consumer feedback could you get beyond just the scan data? Were there ways in which, you know, you could tell that you had a certain variety in the store or in certain DCs at the time? How did you use the information you had to understand what it was that consumers were really looking for?
It's an interesting question because, again, I think it maybe wasn't the most professional or, you know, let's say data-driven decision process. But even things like, let's say, some of the initial varieties that were planted in Peru, where maybe some of them had a little bit more acid, you know, there was consumers that just didn't like it. They just would push back. And especially if they were harvested too early, I think you can let a variety like Biloxi be on the bush, get the right sweetness profile. But I still sometimes would choose that over some of the later genetics that got planted that had a little bit more of a soft texture. And again, that's maybe my own preference, but I think there was a common response when you got a variety like Ventura, if it wasn't handled properly or if it had the age on it, where you had a little bit of a soft kind of, you know, off texture. And consumers would let us know. I mean, and we really, from a retail perspective, it's the consumer that reaches out and complains that you really appreciate, because a lot of times you sit and look at a computer screen and you're looking at an item number and you know, it can become a widget that you're trying to ship as efficiently as possible. And I mean that with all respect, because I know how much hard work goes into it from the grower side and the shipping side. But you start looking at it like you're managing SKUs, but you're managing it from a computer screen. So we would do cuttings all the time. And the ability to go out and see fields and visit farmers and growers, and that was by far the best part of the job, because you could really see what was out there. And just because sales are good didn't necessarily mean you could be entirely proud of everything in the system.
Well, and that's, I guess, my question is that feedback loop. You described the consumers would push back, and I know you didn't mean physically come to the store and, you know, throw them on the ground. So what was that feedback loop? What was that pushback? Was it just that you saw sales slow, or you literally received like what you're describing, I think, which is members writing you or writing Costco explaining their dissatisfaction for a season or a product or a SKU? Like what was that feedback loop?
I would say yes to all the above. You would get some direct feedback via letter, via phone calls, but you would also see the sales at times take a hit. And you could almost kind of predict when that would happen. I mean, based on prior history, you know, sales history and studying it that way. And so, you know, I always wanted to steer the ship, like, let's not base the decision on price. Let's base it on what we think is the best quality available that meets all the other kind of objectives, right? Stay in stock, you know, turnover of inventory and making sure that you know, your entire supply chain was taken care of. I wanted it to be chasing quality, not price. And so the decisions were made around that. Now, again, the constant changing of the industry dictated, you know, some of the things we could and couldn't execute on. But I think it's just, I have a belief in the free market system that consumers are smart. And if they're not happy with the purchase, they may not complain, but they're also not going to buy it again the next week.
That's right. Well, and I think maybe you're also acknowledging a little bit about, you know, a conversation we had. I remember when we spoke before, you shared with me, you know, this kind of marketing to you, and it could be a little bit like what you're describing about just finding yourself making, you know, promotional decisions based on what you're seeing on that screen. And I use marketing in air quotes, you know, for those who can't see what I'm saying here, but more or less you were describing promotions at play when you were at Costco. You know, basically the throughput on the supply was largely driven by price promotions on volumes, larger volumes that are coming in. However, that week when we spoke, you were sharing with me that you were surprised, at least at that week, that the volume didn't move or didn't pick up because of the price promotion, and vice versa. I think what you were describing was, and you were ruminating with me on the inelasticity of price of blueberries for Costco members or just consumers generally that we keep bumping up against. What does that look like to you? What would you describe blueberries representing in the produce department, or just, you know, from your experience, you know, what people will pay? That doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be less. I know you said that there's maybe a barrier for some on the price point that exists today, but then there's also this thing that, you know, do you really need to drop the price to sell the blueberries? Because, you know, it seems like there's some inelasticity on price. So just from your perspective, how do you see that?
I think there were some, let's say, parameters or guardrails that I worked under when I was buying berries. And so, you know, some of it was kind of predetermined based on kind of the company, let's say, business model and how we went to market. You know, I'm a firm believer that there are some consumers that are going to, you know, that have maybe the disposable income to buy, let's say, organic blueberries when they're at the lowest supply point of the year, regardless of what that price point says. I think there are always going to be some consumers that just want to buy them and have them in their refrigerator to eat them. But I think what I'm seeing now is just what a great job retail is doing when it comes to getting blueberries kind of front and center. You know, I don't love to shop, which probably doesn't surprise you, but I love to loiter through grocery stores and just walk around and see what they're doing in the berry space and what they have in the coolers and what new SKUs, like, let's say, jumbos or, you know, sweetest batch or whatever, you know, you get something new that's out there, and then trying to see how the consumers respond. And again, I'm a big believer in the free market, and I think consumers are smart. They don't want to spend their dollars, and nothing was worse to me than when you didn't hit expectations. Right? Let's find a way to try to like meet or exceed expectations wherever we can. And so always kind of chasing that. And I think, again, I think there's just a ton of just momentum when you see blueberries at, whether it's the traditional grocery store, whether it's maybe the Aldi's or Trader Joe's or delivered to you via Amazon. I mean, there's just so many great opportunities to get blueberries. And now with so many different SKUs when it comes to, let's say, jumbos and you know, variety specific, you know, maybe stealing that a little bit from the grape industry of going down that granular where you have a variety on a label. I think it's awesome. I think it's a great way to go. And again, let's make sure that we can do everything we can to exceed expectations of the consumer rather than disappoint.
That's fascinating. I think we could certainly unpack this, but I also want to know what doesn't work. I mean, in the category, you know, what did you experience or what have you seen that just doesn't work?
I think, you know, harvesting early to try to hit a market, right? Or to get the business going, I think doesn't work because it really is at the start of the production curve and you're turning off consumers before you kind of get into your volume. So that's always kind of been a frustration point. You know, I'm seeing more and more that, you know, the real kind of smaller sized fruit just doesn't necessarily work. Works well, like, you know, when I have a salad at a food service or restaurant where they have small blueberries on the plate. And I think that works great in that format. I also just, you know, again, the texture. There are some varieties that I believe they need to be kind of cleaned up in the packing shed. And I think that's one of the great luxuries that blueberries have as an industry of being able to remove what consumers push back on before it hits the retail space and then also before the consumers buy it. So, you know, it's great to be able to clean it up. And as economics of, you know, just the challenges to harvest blueberries become more and more of a challenge, right? Things like machine harvest. And again, I would go back to texture on varieties. Are there varieties that could be machine harvested but still meet or exceed consumers' expectations? If blueberry breeders have been able to figure out how to grow blueberries with no chill, I have no doubt that they're working on genetics that the consumer experience will kind of hit the mark, and yet you're also able to control the labor expense.
Well, I want to unpack what you're doing now because I think you're teasing out, you know, this transition from Costco to Good Farms, and you know, maybe what are those learnings that you've had that have carried over like this that you're now seeing from your vantage point at Good Farms. But before we jump into that, I'd like to take a quick break here for our crop report from our very own Data Joe.
Welcome, blueberry enthusiasts. I'm Joe Vargas, better known as Data Joe. Ready for this week's scoop straight from the fields? Our domestic season is well on its way with Florida's season wrapping up and looking at another record crop from Georgia. We also have reports coming in from Peru and finishing up their season and Mexico, who's in the heart of their season right now. So here once again, your blueberry crop report.
Good morning, everybody. Jackie McCashin with the California Blueberry Commission. Our anticipated volume coming off last week was delayed. We were anticipating a little bit more coming off than what actually did. We are in our anticipated peak week this week, and we're expecting some much warmer weather. And so we could potentially see a dramatic increase in volume as we have these higher temps. Overall, fruit quality is really great. Again, with the rapid warming, we're anticipating like 100 degree plus days. So we're going to, you know, be closely monitoring for berry quality, and we're sticking with our current estimates. And that's the update from California.
Hey, this is Matt McCree reporting for New Jersey. We're pretty much in a holding pattern right now, waiting for stuff to brighten up. Volume still looks pretty good to get started. Weather has been warm and dry, so that's a good thing. Poundage looks to be around 37 million projected for fresh and 8 million for frozen. It looks to be around the week of June 10th. Some guys in town might start around the 10th, and some guys might start maybe the 13th. And that's about all I have.
Hey, this is Jody McPherson giving the crop report for North Carolina. We're having a good week of weather. Temps are in the low 80s, upper 50s, 60 at night, which is allowing to maintain good quality. As we are finishing up the mid-season varieties, O'Neill, some new Hanover, and entering into Legacy, which is our main variety, will be in peak production for the next 10 to 14 days, afterwards rapidly decreasing. And estimating, due to the weather conditions and market, early varieties were at this point decreasing our production to 30 to 32 million pounds fresh, 8 to 10 million pounds process. It could be as much as a 10 million pound decrease from last year. So I really, the 30 to 32, I think, is realistic at this point. We'll know more by next week or within 10 days. Thank you.
Good afternoon. This is Darren Wheeler. I'll be giving the crop report for Georgia. Most growers are now wrapping up their southern high bush, and most growers have already started to prune those southern high bush, with the exception of Legacy. We do have a little Legacy left that we continue to pick and try to go get into the fresh market. We're now starting harvest, well into the harvest, for the early Rabbit Eye varieties, those varieties being Premier Alapahaw, Vernon, and Climax, and a couple of others. With some growers are also getting into the lead picks of Brightwell. So I would say, as an overall, we're probably 70% done with the Georgia fresh crop. Weather now is currently in the 60s and 90s. We don't have any rain anticipated for the next 10 days. And the current forecast for Georgia is 85 million pounds fresh and 20 million pounds frozen. That's 85 fresh, 20 frozen. And that is my report.
This is the report from Peru until the end of week 20, which is the week ending on May the 26th. So far this season, since the beginning of May, Peru has shipped a total of 1 million pounds of fresh blueberries to the world, which is 63% less volume than the volume shipped during the same period last season, right? So basically, we're having a very slow start this season. In May, right? The volume is significantly below what we shipped during May last year. From the total volume shipped so far, 14% has been sent to the US, 30% to Europe, and the rest to other markets in South and Central America, Middle East, and Southeast Asia. During the last week, actually, we haven't recorded any shipments to the US nor Europe during this last week. Okay, so basically what we are seeing right now is that historically, talking about the Peruvian season, 50% of all our volume historically has been shipped in 2 months, which are September and October. If you take the volume of the whole season, 50% has been shipped in 2 months. What we are expecting this season so far is that we are going to have a shorter peak week, you would say. And basically, we are expecting a later peak, more into October, November, right? And compared to previous season, we are expecting for this year that our two most, you would say, important month considering volume will not be September and October, but actually October and November. And these 2 months would account to more or less 40% of all our volume, right? And another trend that we are seeing is more Peruvian volume being pushed into the later part of the year, beginning of next year, right? So we are seeing that December, January, and February are gaining more participation in the Peruvian production. So historically, this summer months for us, winter for you, have historically represent combined, the three of them, around 15% of all our shipments. For this season, we expect, it's still early in the season, but we expect that these 3 months will account for 25 to even 30% of our shipments. So that's the macro trend, you would say, that we are seeing right now. And that might explain this slow start that we are seeing in May.
Thanks so much to our busy growers and colleagues who take time to participate in these reports. As a reminder, you can go to ushbc.org/data to find our Data and Insight Center to see even more data of what's happening in the blueberry industry. All right, back to today's conversation.
Todd, we were just talking about, you know, your experience today coming from Costco. You've transitioned, and maybe a lot of folks here listening to the podcast aren't aware of that. So you've since, I don't know if I'd call it retired from Costco. What would you call it? Transitioned from Costco, no longer with Costco, and now you're with Good Farm. So catch us up on where you've been.
Correct. You know, it's certainly, when we talk about transitions, you know, one of the big transitions for me is both my kids now going to be out of the house here in a few months off of college. And honestly, just had a desire to learn the start of the supply chain. You know, I kind of briefly went through it, but when I came over to Fresh Foods, it was more about a transition for me and the ability to move just back to San Diego as my wife and I were getting ready to have kids or trying to have kids. And now it's another transition for us where the kids are heading off to college, or one's already there and the other one's gone soon. So it was a time for me where I felt like, hey, I'd like to try something different. Maybe long overdue. I mean, I certainly, again, loved what I was doing, but I had done it for a long time, but was very comfortable in focusing on raising a family. So again, my wife did all the heavy lifting on the raising, but nonetheless, I played a role. So then with Good Farms, I mean, I've worked with these folks for a long time and really have developed, I would say, a lot of respect and just kind of appreciation for kind of what they do. And similar to Costco, where I think they care about people, right? And their focus on EFI and worker welfare programs that really kind of try to improve lives, I think is just, it's awesome. And I'm excited to continue to go down that path. So my focus with Good Farms, I mean, Good Farms is a well-established leader when it comes to strawberry production and tomato production, as well as the other berries in the category. But strawberries is by far the main commodity that Good Farms grows and markets and ships, both conventional and organic, both in California and in Baja, Mexico. And really, I'm exploring options to see, you know, could Good Farms bring a value to the blueberry industry and quality during, let's say, the late winter and early spring timeframe here in North America? In my mind, if we can't, we should not look to expand. We have a great California Coastal Blueberry Program right now that is, I think it's awesome and I'm excited about it, but it's still relatively small when it comes to the overall industry. So that's what I'm exploring right now and loving being on this side of it. Just trying to see if we can bring value and if I can, you know, be a part in establishing a good program at Good Farms.
Awesome. And so what would you, I mean, what is that role specifically? What do you have a title? Are you advising? You know, are you there for the blueberry piece of it? How do they have you working there?
No, I think it's initially that was the jumping off start, right? Of let's dive into blueberries. I think Good Farms has just ton of just knowledge on operating in Baja as well as in California. And they have a great team that's kind of done some great work and trials on blueberries. But I'm kind of here, I think, to try to give it a final nudge and let's see if it's something we should expand. There are other projects that I'm working on, but right now I've been asked to do a few key projects and focus on that. And that is what I'm going to do. It's not just as a consulting role. I mean, again, I've tried very hard to stay in San Diego my whole career, and I have been here for most of it since I've been in Fresh Foods, which I said was in about like 99. Before that, I was in other areas of the business with Costco and dry grocery, as well as operations for a real small amount of time. So, you know, the fact that it's here in San Diego, I get to travel to Baja. I've worked with the management team for a very long time, have established friendships and just trust. And I love what they're doing from a worker welfare standpoint. The EFI program is a program that I really kind of love and glad to be a part of it. And so, you know, if we make the decision as a team that the blueberries is not something we should expand, I have all the confidence in the world that there are a lot of other projects. I think Good Farms just hasn't had the bandwidth, quite honestly, to go out there and do some of these different new projects. And hopefully I can give them a little bit of my experience on it, and we can make a successful program.
Yeah, well, they're lucky to have you in the way that I think you have such a perspective on both, you know, what the consumer is looking for, certainly what you've seen in all the years that you've been out there in the field talking to growers. Is Good Farms vertically integrated? Are they farms, or do you partner with other farms to bring fruit through the Good Farms label?
Yes to both. They also have a limited edition label. The Good Farms, a lot of company-owned farms down in Baja, as well as in Central Mexico and in California. But we also have some great kind of outside growers that are, let's say, under the umbrella, but not owned by the company as far as the farms.
Yeah, and that, I guess that's where I wanted to ask this next question from your perspective, someone who's seen a lot in both, you know, the buy side, now in the production side. But if someone is developing a long-term plan for their blueberry business as a grower, you know, or a supplier grower, what are you encouraging them to consider? What's your encouragement for folks to consider today? I know we've talked about genetics, but just you got an elevator moment to talk to somebody about, you know, what it is that they're going to need to do. What does that future look like? What are those considerations that you're encouraging them to think through?
You know, I think it's really just kind of, are they bringing value to the supply chain? Do you have the right genetics and the right system? Are you doing it on a scale where it made sense to buy new technology and be able to put together a great quality pack in the market? I think, you know, if folks are honest and they're not able to bring value, I think that it's probably something where change needs to be taken, whether it's newer genetics, whether it's a whole new commodity or whatever that is. I just believe that the consumers are smart, and they're gonna know if the supply chain is doing their job and bringing good quality products. And there's nothing worse than when you buy a package of something and it disappoints you at home and you have to toss it away. Most consumers just throw it away and then take themselves out of that market for a while. So yeah, I think it really is just about quality. And again, I don't want to be naive. I haven't done enough on the production side. You can over-engineer something and make it so you have the best item in the world, but no one wants to buy it because it's too expensive. So that is I definitely something I recognize, but I just want to be involved in programs that exceed expectations and focus on quality and treat everybody in the ecosystem as respectfully and I think in a fair manner. I always tried to do that in my prior role, buying. And that's going to be my MO moving forward as well.
Well, looking forward to working with you in this new capacity. Again, great to have you on the show to kind of talk through the experience you've had now in both sides. But I'm going to fly us back up to 35,000 feet here. And I personally want to pick your brain with everybody listening at the same time, but that's okay. I just want to hear from you. You know, USHBC is responsible for the industry vision of making blueberries the world's favorite fruit. So what advice does Todd have? You know, you've seen some of the programs you and I were talking before the show started about, you know, we're a sponsor of Major League Pickleball this year. We do a lot of things, food service, food ingredient, health research. But what advice do you have for USHBC as the industry's marketing arm going forward that you think would be extremely important for us to look at and focus on?
You know, I think flavor, the great eating experience, the health benefits, all the things that you're already kind of focusing on, I think are awesome. I think being kind of consumer friendly and face forward when it comes to things like the pickleball. You have now a large just blueberry grower shipper that's going to be sponsoring an MLS team. Awesome. I mean, I love that. I mean, to me, I was at a baseball game the other day and seeing an avocado brand was basically marketing, had a billboard at the baseball stadium here in San Diego. And I just think, like, I love seeing fresh, good for you items out in front. Like, let's focus on what is right with our, you know, diet and our way of life, as opposed to some of the other options that we have. And then again, I had a hot dog at that game, so I didn't necessarily follow my own advice. But I also just appreciate, like, we're all trying to make better, healthy choices. Let's make it as easy as possible. So I think what you're doing with pickleball is so cool. I think it's, you know, I'm not very good. I actually got injured playing pickleball, which is embarrassing to say because I was trying to keep up with my 18-year-old son.
You're one of those statistics. We've read all about it.
it was embarrassing and gave my son a lot of stuff to come at me on and make fun of his old man. But again, I think it's being face forward on stuff like that is just awesome. I think giving the data to shippers that the USHBC and NABC do such a good job on, because a lot of companies aren't going to have access to all that data. I think the way you accumulate it is just, it's awesome. You know, data is great if you know how to get it to a usable form, but if you don't, it's just too much. There's just too much numbers out there and, you know, paralysis by analysis where, like, what does this mean to me on my farm in this window? And I think, you know, USHBC does a great job of breaking that down and putting it in a usable format. So again, I'm so excited to be back in the blueberry space, and I'm just excited to be talking berries again. So it's all good stuff for me.
It's exciting. Yeah, it really is. It does feel like you said at the beginning was just scratch of the surface. You know, when we're running the numbers, and I know a lot of folks have heard us, you know, kind of repeat these statistics over and over again, but those become the new targets. The fact that there's this huge runway for the category that we're not enjoying yet today. And this conversation that we're having here about what's it going to take to get there? You know, what do we need to do? What do we need to invest in? What does that future now start to look like? Because it does look so vast. And it's such a great product. So, you know, what's those barriers? What's holding us back? And how do we knock those down so that we can start to enjoy an increase in that demand that we can see out there? So this has been a fascinating conversation, Todd. I appreciate you coming on and, you know, just sharing your insights from years of experience. I would be remiss if after all this conversation about the things that you've seen over the years, you've tasted over the years, the farms you've traveled to over the years, but what's Todd Egan's favorite variety? When I say that, what stands out? What's the first variety that comes to your mind?
You're going to put me on the spot here, and I'm going to probably have some tough conversations with folks, but I would tell you that I've eaten some Sequoia from Peru this season that I could not believe how good they were. I mean, from every attribute, right? And I went back to the store and bought more like 2 hours later, because I'd already dusted off the clamshell that I bought. So yeah, just fantastic.
Okay, so Sequoia, but was it Sequoia Pop or was it Sequoia Beauty? I know there's a couple of them.
I'm pretty sure it was Sequoia Pop, and you know, size, you know, it was a jumbo pack that I purchased at a local store here. And they were fantastic.
Well, that's excellent. And it's a question I'm going to keep asking every guest, because, you know, I go back over the years I've done this podcast now, and we're asking that question at the end of every show because it's fun, and appreciate you playing along. So Todd, anything else you'd like to add before I let you go? This has been great. If there's anything else you'd like to make sure we cover before we go, that'd be great.
Casey, I just appreciate your time and just allowing me on here. Again, I listen to the podcast on my commutes whenever I'm in the car, and just enjoy just hearing from folks in the industry, a lot of the folks that I know on a, you know, personal level. And I just find it exciting. I hope I was able to add something that somebody's interested in listening to. But if not, I enjoyed the time speaking and being on the call.
Oh, I'm sure. We've got an audience of people who are going to appreciate hearing from you again and hearing you reminisce and ruminate on what the future is going to look like going forward from here. So appreciate your time, Todd. Thank you for being with us on The Business of Blueberries.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Well, that's it for episode 171. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with more innovation, collaboration, family, and hard work right here on The Business of Blueberries.